This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya! Welcome in to Rico Bronya. I'm your host, Evan Roberts. We are in the middle of spring training. How does that feel? We're in the middle of baseball, but not really. Guys warming up, guys throwing bullpens, guys hitting and batting practice, and guys talking. And that's going to be the focus of today's Rico Bronya. Carlos Mendoza met the media for the very first time on Tuesday. He met the media again then on Wednesday. And David Stearns also met the media on Wednesday, officially announcing the Pete Alonso re-signing. So what we've done a couple of times on the Rico, it's kind of educational, it's kind of fun, is we listen to the most important parts of a Carlos Mendoza press conference or a David Stearns press conference. And then we react to what they say. And what's fun about it is it works for two reasons. Number one, if you didn't hear any of their press conference, here's a nice way to listen to it. And B, we give you instant reaction to everything they said. So we'll start with Carlos Mendoza. We took out some of it. Like, this is your editing. What was it called in high school, Hoff, when you were supposed to read a book? You didn't read. Oh, I got a Cliff Notes. Cliff Notes. I didn't even need your help. Cliff Notes.
You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. I think I used that a lot in high school at times. So it's sort of a Cliff Notes. Like, we took some of the questions out, but we included ones that are interesting and certainly lead to discussions here on the Rico Bronya in the weeds on the New York Mets in 2025. So let's start with Carlos Mendoza. Here's some of the questions. Here's some of the answers. And of course, we will throughout give you our instant reaction.
Also, we spoke to Senga earlier, and he spoke about his health. He also mentioned a couple times ramping up slowly this spring. But just from a managerial perspective, what does that look like for you guys?
Yeah, he dealt with a lot, you know, last year. Not a secret, right? And this offseason, at the beginning of the offseason, was kind of like finishing his rehab, if you want to call it. And then it was kind of like a shutdown period, and then the build-up again, like his preparation as a healthy player for this year. So, you know, we'll see what he looks like. I know Hef visited with him in Japan not too long ago, and the reports were really good. We just got to see the intensity and how he's going to bounce back and things like that. But our goal is to have him ready to break camp, you know. So What is that going to look like? We'll see, you know. But he's healthy, knock on wood, feeling good, and ready to go.
I don't know about you. Whenever Mendy or anybody talks about Kodai Senga, it is so cautious. It is so, all right, so far, everything's okay. Knock on wood. We're going to be careful. We're going to see. We've only had 2 years of Kodai Senga. Year one, he was outstanding. Year two was obviously all about injuries, an injury that occurred a year ago, then a setback, then a return, then an injury again, then a setback. And then, oh, wait, he's pitching in the postseason and he's starting and trying to contribute to some of the most important games of the season. I think with Kodai, I am going to be nervous throughout spring training. There's always going to be that like skepticism, but so far, so good. He is clearly very important to this rotation.
Charles, at what positions do you want to take a look at Brett Beatty this spring?
Yeah, third base and second base. You know, we want to keep him in the dirt as much as possible. We want to give him some exposure in a second base as well. This is a position where he, when he went down to AAA, he played a lot. We want to see it ourselves. So you'll see him a lot between those two positions. Maybe a little bit of the outfield on some stay back day when he's not playing, or you know. But mainly, especially in game actions, you'll see him at third base and at second base for now.
Obviously, there's a lot of things that can happen over the course of a season. You know, Pete Alonso could get hurt, and Mark Vientos is forced to play first base, or Mark Vientos can get hurt, and Brett Beatty is forced to play third base. There could be an injury at DH. But if you look at this roster right now, to me, there are two avenues besides DH and besides injuries where Brett Beatty could find his opportunities. Number one is second base. I don't believe Jeff McNeil's position as the everyday second baseman is rock solid safe. So clearly, getting a look at Beatty at second base is incredibly important, because there could be a scenario where if Beatty hits, where he pulls a Vientos from a year ago and Jeff McNeil pulls a McNeil from the last 2 years where he doesn't perform in the first halves, that we could see Brett Beatty getting an opportunity at second base. But I want to see more outfield. I didn't love that answer, because I can see a scenario where if they're not getting production out of Cyrian Taylor or Brandon Nimmo isn't healthy, where there could be opportunities in the outfield. And I think right now for where Brett is in his kind of career and where the Mets are with the guys on this roster, I think Brett Beatty's got to learn as many positions as possible. Now, he's never going to be a Gold Glover in left field, but maybe he could avoid being Todd Hundley or Daniel Murphy. So I wanted to hear more of, yes, he's going to play a lot of outfield, but Mendy's words is we're going to see a lot of him on the dirt at third base and second base. I'd want to see even more of him kind of learning the outfield.
And do you have any, other than Acuna, do you have any backup shortstop options in camp, really?
Yeah. Look, Madrigal's going to get some exposure there. Madrigal will get some reps at shortstop. Acuna, for sure. So we got options here.
That's not a lot of options, Carlos. Do we have options? Yeah, so here are your options right now. Option number one is a guy who's never played a big league inning at shortstop, and Nick Madrigal. He's just going to go over there and learn it. And the other option, and I think this is going to be one of the key questions of spring training, is Luis Angel Acuna, who's still considered to be a prospect. Are the Mets going to be willing to have Luis Angel Acuna be on the major league roster as a backup, where he's not the second baseman until further notice? He's not the shortstop, clearly. He's a backup. And I don't know how many at-bats he's getting right away in center field. So, yeah, we've got options. It's not a lot. You know, Nick Madrigal, when he was signed, there were two questions I had about him. Number one was, what kind of contract was he signing? We found out it was a split contract, so they could obviously send him down. And then the other question was, how much experience does Nick Madrigal have at shortstop? And the answer is not a lot. Now, there's a chance the Mets could be pleasantly surprised, or at least okay, with his defensive shortstop and have him make the team as a guy who at least in an emergency can play shortstop, because clearly the plan is Francisco Lindor is going to play an awful lot and they're not going to need a lot of innings at shortstop, but they don't have a lot of options at short. That's the other disadvantage Beatty has. He's not a shortstop. And when you look at the way the Mets roster is set up in terms of they're probably only going to carry the mandatory minimum of position players. We have roster rules in baseball. It's 13 and 13 in case you forgot, right? So they could carry 14 position players. They could go less on the pitchers. They can't go above that with pitchers. They cannot carry 14 pitchers. They can only carry 13. They're not going to carry more than 13 position players, though. So when you look at the slots that are safe on the bench, they can only have room for one guy. And that's the disadvantage Brett Beatty has, that he doesn't play shortstop. But there aren't a lot of options in terms of backup shortstop for the New York Mets.
As far as the Major League roster goes, what jobs or what spots do you see as up for grabs during camp?
Well, the way I see it, there's always competition. I think competition brings the best out of people, you know, whether it's bullpen spot, whether it's an infield, where's, you know, that extra utility infielder, you know, the rotation, how is that going to play out? So we got a lot of good players. We got a lot of good options, and we're going to be facing some really hard conversations and some hard decisions at the end of camp. That means everyone's healthy. Everybody's performing, and that's a good thing. That's a good problem to have.
So barring injuries, and I'm going to knock on some wood right now because God knows there will be injuries, and hopefully they're not major. What Carlos Mendoza didn't say, but I think he kind of meant, is there really isn't a lot of competitions. You know, I mentioned the position players. Right now, you've got four infielders that are locks in Lindor, McNeil, Vientos, and Alonso. You've got six outfielders / DHs that are locks in Nimmo, Taylor, Siri, Soto, Marte, and Winker, and you have the two catchers. You do the math, you're already at 12. And like I talked about with the roster, you're only going to have 13 position players in all likelihood. That's only one spot. So that's a competition, I guess, for one spot. And as far as the bullpen's concerned, there's certainly a lot more fluidity because there can be a lot more injuries. You almost expect more injuries when it comes to pitching. But maybe there's two bullpen spots on the line, which we'll get into a little bit later. So as we go into this spring training, unlike the Yankees, who have like a legitimate open competition for third base as of right now, and I'm not complaining, it's good because it means you have a good roster. They don't have a lot of competition. So I don't think Carlos wanted to say that because you always want to keep people motivated. There's always a competition, but is there really a competition?
Still looking at a six-man rotation? Mostly.
It depends on Senga, obviously. Yeah. But if Senga's healthy, which he is, knock on wood, there's a good chance we'll go with a six-man rotation, you know, throughout the year, and even with some off days included there. So, yeah, we got options. We got depth. So that's good to have.
We certainly knew throughout this offseason that they were going to have a six-man rotation. But what I get from that answer from Carlos is that, God forbid there's an injury to Kodai Senga. And like I mentioned, that's going to be kind of a nervousness that we all have until he's out there and he's pitching in the regular season and he's getting through, you know, not only games, but then coming back 6 days later. But the six-man rotation, certainly with the way Carlos answered that, is really relying on Senga. You know, if something happened to Kodai Senga and he was missing time, I think they'd go back to a five-man rotation. Now, a lot of things can change that. If you've got six guys pitching incredibly well, it's almost a good problem to have, then I guess they would stick with a six-man. But it really sounds, based on that answer, that the idea of a six-man rotation is around Kodai Senga. And I don't hate it. I've been a fan of a six-man rotation for a while, but a lot of it depends on who you have, like what your rotation looks like. If you have a big-time ace, then I don't really love a six-man rotation because you want to maximize the amount of times that that great pitcher is pitching. But the thing I like about a six-man, and I got to ask Mendoza about this. I hope we get an interview with him when we go down. We're going to go down to spring training March 8th and 9th. But worst case scenario, if we don't get an interview with him, Hoff, we'll at least get a private conversation with him. And I'll ask this question, and then I'll come back and I'll tell everybody the answer. But I've always been under the, I guess, the idea that the perk of a six-man rotation is that because guys are going to get extra rest, as a manager, you'll feel better about pushing them in the starts that they make, feeling like, all right, if I was going to take this guy out after 95 pitches, maybe I'm more likely to let this guy go a little bit further because there's an extra day of rest. By the way, you guys should be really proud of me. I just watched the entire Knicks-Hawks overtime without reacting to it here on the Rico Bronya. So I showed major restraint. That was some game. Anyhow, you probably already know that because you've downloaded the Rico and you're like, oh yeah, the Knicks won 149, 148. I already knew that. But that's why I like a six man under that guise, if it's even true, that you'll feel, hey, I'm going to push Sean Manaea a little bit more. He's going to get 5 days rest, maybe even 6 days rest for his next turn because there's an off day and we're going with a six man rotation. So I hope that's how it benefits the other starters. Obviously, how it benefits Kodai is that that's what he was used to when he was pitching over in Japan.
Out of six spots, how many locks do you have?
How many locks we got? I don't know. I mean, we got a lot of options, you know. But it comes down to health, you know. So he's for me to sit here on, you know, before day one of pitchers and catchers and say these guys are locked. I mean, I don't think that's fair, you know, because we still got a long ways to go.
That's the superstition of baseball, because there are five locks. I'll answer the question for Carlos. He doesn't want to say it because you can get hurt. A guy can get hurt at any moment, and then the rotation looks different. And I would say this, and I hope I'm wrong. Someone's going to get hurt. I'm about to name five guys who are the locks for the Met rotation. And the truth is, by the time we get to March 27th, March 28th, whatever opening day is, I forget now, one of those guys, maybe more, are going to be hurt. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that's not the case. But that's usually the way it goes. Obviously, Kodai Senga is a lock if he's healthy. David Peterson is a lock if he's healthy. Sean Manaea, considering what they just paid him, is a lock. Clay Holmes, that's the big story of spring training. They're moving him to the rotation. He is a lock to be in the rotation. Same with Frankie Montas. Those are the five locks. Then you've got two guys who are out of options, who are going to be on the major league roster if they're not traded before opening day. And Griffin Canning is not an option in that regard, but it's Griffin Canning and it's Paul Blackburn. So if you're looking for a competition, I guess that is one. Who is the sixth starter for the New York Mets, assuming the other five guys are healthy? I think that is a legitimate competition because as we sit here right now, I would lean towards Paul Blackburn, but you never know. Now, they'll both be on the roster unless Blackburn is traded, which I don't even think they'll do because I do think they like having the depth that they have. So those five are locks, and then between the two of them, one will be the sixth man in the rotation.
Hey, Carlos, the outside criticism of the team falls on the rotation without having that sort of like true number one. How do you view that? And what's like the upshot of this group being able to overcome that if that is an issue?
Yeah, no, I mean, again, like you said, that's more like outside noise. We do feel comfortable with, you know, our front end of the rotation, especially if everyone is healthy, but we also feel really good about our depth. You know, some of the guys that we were able to bring on board, whether it was a Frankie Montas, whether it's a Clay Holmes, we were able to bring back Sean Manaea. So, again, those are some of the guys that are going to play a huge role for us, and we feel really good about our options.
Well, what do you want him to say? We don't have an ace. I think that's obviously a lot of fair criticism that is looked at with this rotation. They do have a lot of depth. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. By the way, a very interesting baseball move that we should spend a few minutes discussing does not involve the New York Mets, but certainly you can look at this contract and compare it to Pete Alonso. Alex Bregman finally signed. Alex Bregman signed with the Boston Red Sox. And he's signing a 3-year opt-out laden contract, which I, off the top, I'm surprised about because Bregman's had long-term offers and there's been no indication that he was looking at kind of a short-term deal. And this could be a short-term deal because it's a 3-year deal with opt-outs. And you're ready for this? He's getting $120 million. So Alex Bregman is getting $40 million a season. How about that? Pete Alonso got 30 on a 1-year deal, and then year two, that number goes down. But the early indication on the Bregman contract is
$120 million over 3 years. So he gets a massive amount of money to join the Boston Red Sox. And I guess that means Rafael Devers will move over to play first base. And apparently Bregman had a bigger offer, at least in terms of years, that he turned down. And you know where that team was? That was the Blue Jays. Because that's what happens. The Blue Jays go after people. They make massive offers, and nobody wants to go there. So certainly interesting. I wonder if Alonso looks at this and says, you kidding me? I got $30 million, and this guy's getting $40 million? Anyhow, back to Carlos Mendoza.
Assuming Senga is okay during the spring, would you put, say, Canning, Blackburn, and McGill for that sixth spot?
Yeah, they're all competing, you know, and we're going to build, you know, Blackburn, you know, because of the injury, might be a little bit behind. But the goal is for him to be fully built up by the time we break camp. Again, if everyone is healthy, there's going to be some tough conversations and some tough decisions. But as far as, like, building everyone up, whether it's Canning, McGill, Blackburn, all of those guys, you know, that's the goal.
You know why I don't think McGill, I mean, he's in the competition. Carlos said that. But he's not in the competition, in my opinion, is because he's got options to go back down to the minor leagues. And in the case of Paul Blackburn, you know, he says he may be behind, but should be ready to go for the start of the season. Obviously, you always have an IL stint as a possibility where you keep him around. He just goes on the injured list and misses the first week or two of the season. Griffin Canning, who is a free agent signing, cannot go down to the minor leagues. Tyler McGill can. So to me, it would take a lot. It would take injuries, besides injuries, because that's always the caveat. It would take McGill dominating, which I think he did last spring. Didn't he have the greatest spring training ever? Or at least a very good spring training last year? And Canning and Blackburn to be god-awful, I think, for McGill to take that job. Just based on, and I know that's annoying sometimes here in spring training, but I do think it's a major factor. The fact that McGill could either go to the bullpen, which is a possibility, even though they're stretching him out to start, or just go to the minor leagues. You can't do that necessarily with Griffin Canning and Paul Blackburn. You can't. So he's in the competition, but I would put him a distant third in that possibility to be the sixth starter.
Is there anybody else missing that I mentioned for that sixth spot potentially?
I mean, we got a lot of guys in camp. So, but yeah, that's fair to say. Not as a starter. Not as a starter. We're going to stretch him out as a, you know, multiple inning guy out of the bullpen, but not as a starter.
That's a big development. It's not a surprising development, I think, when you looked at the makeup of the rotation right now. But they're basically telling you we've got five starters. We've got three guys who are competing for that sixth spot, seventh spot, eighth spot. If we need extras because of injuries, we feel good about just telling Jose Budo, you're a reliever. And I think what that means is if the injuries run deeper, they're going to go to Brandon Sproat if he's ready. They're going to kind of go past Jose Budo. He's a reliever, not for the rest of his career, but certainly for 2025. So what that means, in my opinion, is you now have four absolute locks in the bullpen. There's more than that, but I go absolute locks. Edwin Diaz, AJ Minter, Ryan Stanek, and now I put Budo in there. Budo is another guy without options. So he's going to be in the bullpen. As Mendy said, they're not even stretching him out, and he's one of those relievers. A guy like Reed Garrett is also, you would think, a lock. Denil Nunez if he's healthy. But those two guys have the options to go down to the minor leagues. Jose Budo doesn't. So that confirms any debate. Jose Budo is a reliever. They're not even stretching him out at the beginning of spring training.
Sort of along those same lines, how do you view Tyler McGill going into spring training right now? Is he a starter or is he a reliever?
Yeah, he's going to be built up as a starter. You know, he came in feeling really good. Thing already throwing live BP, so he's in the competition. You know, and he's going to play a big role for us. We saw some improvement last year, especially when he went down. Then he came back up with the two seam against righties, and we know the velo's always there. The way he uses all of his pitches, and again, he's coming into camp, competing for a starting role, and that's how we're going to build him up.
That also makes me think that if he doesn't get the starting role, which I don't think he will, he won't be used out of the bullpen. They'll send him down to AAA to keep him stretched out so that if there is an injury, and there will be, he comes back up and makes a handful of starts like he has the last two seasons.
Is the bullpen an option for him?
I mean, there's always an option. But again, right now, as we sit here, he's going to be built up as a starter.
Yeah. There's always an option. I take that as code as not really. At least not to start. My projection would be they stretch him out in case somebody gets hurt. If we're lucky and nobody gets hurt, he's at AAA remaining stretched out so that if he needs to be called up the 1st of May or God knows when, he enters the rotation. It doesn't sound like they're converting McGill at any point to a reliever unless it's later in the season.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. Like, what if we have a situation where, for example, you know, Clay Holmes is pitching well. He's pitching good enough in the starting pitching role that – and then someone in the bullpen does go down. You tell me that they would prefer – would they prefer to put Holmes in – like, whether it's Diaz, whether it's Minter, whether it's someone significant. You're telling me that they'd prefer to put Holmes in the bullpen, or would you think they'd move to McGill to the bullpen?
I don't think they'd move either right now to the bullpen. I think Clay Holmes is in the rotation. I know that's still kind of something we're all getting used to, but we got to face it. Let's see how he does. Let's just see. I think for the foreseeable future, he's a starter. I don't think he's an option early in the season to be moved to the bullpen. And I don't think McGill's going to be either, because I think the Mets look at it as, all right, they've got 8 starting pitchers. This doesn't include, you know, Brandon Sproat or any of the younger guys, like 8 guys who they feel could make a start at any point. The 5 that we mentioned, and then obviously Canning, Blackburn, and McGill. And I don't think they're necessarily going to move anyone to a short relief bullpen role, because what if they need that guy to make a start? Like, I think Canning, let's say Canning's the odd man out. He's not the 6th guy in the rotation. He's still going to make the team. I think he's a long reliever. And if he's a long reliever, he still remains stretched out so he could be reinserted back into the rotation. But I don't think you're looking at McGill being moved into a short reliever, and certainly not Clay Holmes, at least early. You know, we get to July and August. Obviously, a lot can change. But I think early in the season, they want to keep that starting pitching depth. And that's why it doesn't sound like they think of McGill as a guy they would move to the bullpen. But a lot can change, you know, especially the young guys. Like, Brandon Sproat is one of those young players. I remember thinking this a year ago with Jet Williams. Obviously, it didn't work out. Drew Gilbert, because injuries derailed their seasons. Well, I'm excited about the possibility of Brandon Sproat coming up here this season. But he's got to go to AAA and pitch well. That's the bottom line. Now, he goes down to AAA and he pitches well, and all of a sudden, the Mets are feeling comfortable like they did with Christian Scott last year to bring him up and make a handful of starts. That now allows you to say, okay, Tyler McGill, go to the bullpen. I'm still intrigued by the ideal of McGill as a short reliever, but clearly by those words from Mendy, that's not happening, at least to start.
What about Kranick? Will you guys have him stretch out to start, or will he come out of the bullpen?
He's more like a bullpen type guy, multiple inning, you know. So he's another guy that he's going to get built up for multiple innings out of the bullpen.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Max Kranick. Remember Max Kranick? I was all excited about him last spring training. I was pumped up about Max Kranick in spring training last year. Yeah, I guess that's another one of those options out of the bullpen in the minor leagues if there's injuries. Last year, Max Kranick pitched, let's see his numbers last year, at Syracuse, 41 games, 63 innings. So kind of what Mendy described as a guy that can go multiple innings, 53 strikeouts, 20 walks, an ERA of 3.57. He also briefly pitched in Binghamton and St. Lucie, but a very, very small sample size. So, yeah, I mean, there's one of the many bullpen options that we will probably see at some point, because we will end up seeing, you know, how many relievers are we going to see this year? You'll start the season with six of them. Six of them, yes, because they're going to go with a six-man rotation. I got to get that in my head, and I got to do the math. Six plus six is 12. No, I've got that wrong. There's 13 pitchers on a bullpen. So if there are six starters, seven relievers. So if you look at the seven relievers, how many are we going to see in total before the season's done? Maybe like 18. So I guess Max Kranick will be a guy we see at some point.
Carlos, with Clay Holmes, do you just have to be like more careful with as he stretches out after, you know, so many years of relieving? How do you guys overlook that build-up process, and where is he right now?
The pitching group put together a really good plan where he's to a point where I think he's scheduled to throw out three ups live BP tomorrow. So I think it's just not so much the build-up, but just his routine, especially the days that it's not a heavy day of throwing for him. Just keeping those days low. Is going to be the key, and this is some of the adjustment he's making. But as far as like the build up and all that goes, we feel good where he's at right now. And you got to give him credit. And he's a guy that showed up here the second week of January, so he's in a good place right now.
I'm excited. I am. It doesn't mean I think he's going to win the Cy Young, but I'm excited to see what Clay Holmes can be as a starting pitcher. He's one of the more intriguing things to watch throughout spring training, and obviously once the season starts.
Outside of the Tommy John guys, Christian Scott and I think Alzolay. Is there anyone in camp who you would question health-wise, just their readiness for opening day at this point?
Well, I wouldn't say questioning, but AJ Minter, you know, just, you know, was in August. He had hip surgery. He's in a good spot. He's scheduled to throw his first bullpen at the end of this month, and the goal is for him to be ready. But other than that, knock on wood, you know, feel good where everyone is at.
AJ had the hip surgery, remember, and that cost him the last couple of months of the season. Who knows? Maybe that game 161 plays out very differently if AJ Minter's available. I'm hopeful he'll be ready for the start of the season. It certainly sounds like there's confidence from Carlos, but got to keep an eye on that considering he is coming off that procedure.
Carlos mentioned earlier that you think there should be competition across the board, and that's how you view things. Especially given some of McNeil's struggles last year, do you view him penciled in as the second baseman for this team, or do you want, whether it's a Beatty or an Acuna, thinking about trying to push for at least some playing time there potentially this year?
Yeah, look, Jeff is going to play a huge role. You know, we know how important he is for this team. He got out of the gate and struggled last year, but you got to give him credit because there was a stretch here where he wasn't even playing for us. And then he kept working, and then you saw the results in the second half. And that's going to be the case here, you know. I'll say it. He's a big part of this team. He's going to get a lot of opportunities. But Acuna's going to get opportunities. Brett Beatty's going to get opportunities. Madrigal's going to get opportunities, you know. So we got some Jake Williams is going to get opportunities as a prospect, you know. So, but Jeff is – the good thing with Jeff is he provides versatility, you know. So you can move him around everywhere, even though we got a crowded outfield right now. But, you know, I could see him getting a lot of reps at second base.
So did he answer the question? Because – that was a great question by Steve Gelbs. It was, hey, is Jeff McNeil guaranteed to be the everyday second baseman? And there was a lot of words used by Carlos, but I don't think he answered it. A lot of, oh, he's going to have a big role. And don't worry, Acuna will get an opportunity, and Beatty will get an opportunity, and Madrigal is going to get an opportunity. And oh, by the way, McNeil could go play the outfield too, even though the outfield's very crowded. That doesn't feel like it was an answer from Carlos. Now, I'm trying to read into this, like I have with a lot of his other answers. Is that his way of saying, shut up, McNeil's the everyday second baseman, pipe down? Or is that his way of saying, no, not really? I mean, he could have said, yeah, look, everyone's got to earn their job. Jeff McNeil has not played well the last two seasons. He did finish strong. He's right about that. My vibe would be McNeil's the everyday second baseman to start. And now I'm just giving you my opinion now, not what I think Mendy's thinking. I would have Jeff McNeil as the opening day second baseman. I would give him that first opportunity under the guise of he won a batting title a few years ago. He did finish strong. Let's see what he's got. The difference is I'd have a very quick plug, not to bench him entirely, but for him to not play every day. Now, who's the guy that's going to take at-bats away from him? Obviously, let's see what Acuna and Beatty does in spring training. But I think the disadvantage that Brett Beatty's going to have is that, as I said at the beginning of this pod, there's an avenue for Luis Angel Acuna to make this team. If the Mets are comfortable with him not being an everyday player, but, hey, he's going to play a little bit at second base once in a while. He may get some at-bats in center. He may come in late for defense, which I wouldn't be against. He may be a late-inning pinch runner. And oh, by the way, if he performs and McNeil doesn't, he may turn out to be the most of the time second baseman, or it could turn into a platoon at second base. If they're comfortable with him making the team as that role to begin with, it can happen. Beatty's got a tough spot here, barring injury, because like I mentioned, he doesn't play shortstop. So would the Mets start the season without a backup shortstop? Remember, they did do that for a few weeks last year when Beatty and Vientos were both on the team, the transition between Vientos becoming the starter. And then finally, they sent Beatty down. You remember who they called up? It's a trivia question. They did not have a shortstop. Beatty and Vientos were on the team, and they finally sent Beatty down, and they called up a shortstop. That shortstop's name, Jose Iglesias. More on him coming up in a little bit. Let's get back to Carlos Mendoza.
Only saw it for, I think, five innings last year. But what can a healthy Senga mean to your rotation as a whole?
Man, yeah, those five innings were electric, you know. Yeah, you know, you're watching him pitch, and it's like, man, this is real, you know. So it means a lot if we can have a healthy Senga, because you guys saw it in 2023. I saw it briefly last year, and he could be special, you know, what he's able to do with the baseball, move around, the velo, and he competes. So it'll be huge for the team. It'll be huge for the rotation and for Senga, you know, because it was a hard year for him in 2024.
That was very Buck-like. Remember when Buck Showalter was the manager and he would make a non-funny joke and then the media would just go fall all over each other? Isn't that kind of what just happened right there? Ah, it was an electric five innings. Everybody's belly laughing. Though, it was true. It was a very electrifying five innings. I won't forget that game from 2024. There are many games in that memorable season that will be etched in my memory. And firework night against the Braves, with our buddy Sal declaring the wild card race over, a little fictitiously, whatever the term is. He was having fun. It's late. I'm sorry. My brain doesn't always work. And then Kodai Senga gets hurt. It looks like he got shot. Literally, that's the way it looked when Senga went down. Looked like he got shot in the leg. And it was depressing. My son was wearing a Senga jersey. He was all pumped up. We're seeing Kodai Senga. We're all thinking amazing things as he's dominating. Like, wow, we have a race. Here we go. And then he goes down, and I thought we weren't going to see him again. Obviously, we did.
And then with Buto, why did you ultimately make the decision to limit him to relief rather than stretch him fully out?
Yeah, those were some of the conversations that we were having in the offseason. We just felt it was best for him, for the team, to keep him in that role, you know, as a multi-inning guy, you know, in that 40-45 range pitch mark. So that was it.
Yeah, I think it's the roster. You know, going into the offseason, we had that discussion about Buto, and I thought that the offseason was going to dictate how they would use him. And they clearly felt comfortable getting, you know, middle to back of the rotation arms. They did add the bullpen arm and AJ Minter. They obviously kept Ryan Stanek. But you just look at the makeup of the team. He's more valuable to the Mets right now as a reliever. And I think that's an easy explanation.
Carlos, you talked about you have a crowded outfield. You also have Winker back as a potential DH. What's the challenge going to be finding a spot for Starling Marte?
Yeah, he's another guy that is going to be a big part of this team. We gotta keep him healthy. He's going to be the biggest thing. You know, this is a guy that's dealt with injuries the past couple of years, but when he's healthy, he's an impactful player. You know, obviously the reps in right fields are going to be limited for obvious reasons. But those are some of the conversations that I'll continue to have with him. You know, whether it's DH, you know, him and Jesse. But the fact that if he doesn't see his name in the starting lineup, he might get the biggest at bat of a game, you know, and he's got to be ready for it, you know. So he's got a huge role in this team. And again, I think we just got to keep him healthy. And this is some of the conversations that I'll have with him during spring training and throughout the year.
And logic tells me if he's not playing the field, and I don't want to say he's never going to play the field. I don't think this is a JD Martinez situation, but he's not going to play the field a lot. Isn't it more likely he stays healthy? I'm just using logic here. If he's going to basically be a designated hitter, and even as a DH, he doesn't play every single day. He plays against every lefty, but against certain righties, Jesse Winker is starting. And I agree with Mendy, coming off the bench, he could have a huge role, especially if Winker gets the start. A lefty is in the game. You're not letting Jesse Winker face a whole lot of lefties. Starling Marte is going to pinch it, and he's going to get a significant at-bat. Isn't it likelier, I knock on wood when I say this too, but isn't it likelier that we're going to get a healthier Starling Marte if he's never playing the field? That's my hope. It's why I'm high on Starling Marte this season. I really am. I think that this is exactly what he needs at this part of his career at his age, which is be a part-time DH. I think he'll see the field. I just don't think he's going to see the field a lot.
And as far as Beatty goes, what did you guys see from him back in AAA last year. I mean, he's just at the point now where he's got to do it at the big league level. There's nothing left to kind of show it.
Pretty much. And this is a guy that is willing to do whatever it takes to make this club, you know, and he's been very vocal about it with some of the conversations that, whether it was David, myself.
Don't just live life. Pursue it.
I guess we have a little commercial getting in the way.
You know, he just got to go out there and do it and be himself, you know, because he is a really good player. There's tools, and there's a lot to like about Brett Beatty. So he just got to be himself, go out there, go do it, and let the rest take care of itself.
That's the tricky part about Beatty if he doesn't make this team. Where, let's say they do elect to go with Acuna or Madrigal and Beatty's not here. If they send him to AAA, he's proven it all at AAA. You know, last year when he got sent down, he ended up going out there hitting 16 home runs in 62 games, had an 850 OPS. He was fine. He was very good. The year before that, he was really tearing it up at AAA when we were demanding that they call him up. So if he's not at the major league level, there's nothing left to prove in the minor leagues. Last year when he was down at AAA, he was learning second base. And I remember when he was learning second base, how many times did I say on the Rico, call him up. Let him play a little second base. But I guess at that time, they didn't have enough confidence in his defense. We're going to finally get to see it. We never saw Brett Beatty at second base at the major league level. So that's another tiny thing I'm excited about for spring training. It's amazing I'm going to say this. I'm excited to watch Brett Beatty play second base in spring training. I sort of am. I want to see what he looks like. I want to see if he's any good. And we'll get to see that once games start in a couple of weeks.
This is perhaps similar to Mike's question, but how do you kind of gauge the balance between some of the young players maybe biding their time at AAA or, you know, behind as a bench role versus, you know, going to AAA and getting that regular playing time, just that balance of maybe they're ready, but the playing time is something that could be an issue at the major league level.
Yeah, I feel like every team every year is facing those same decisions, you know, where you got guys that are ready to go and make an impact at the big league level. But then the question becomes, is it better for them to continue their development and get everyday at bats as opposed to just sitting on the bench and, you know, play once a week, you know? So I think it all depends where you at when you break camp, you know, what the roster is going to look like and how much playing time can you give those guys, even on a utility role, you know, because if there's someone that you could put at second, at third, even at short to spell Francisco, you know, and you could find a way to get them in games and get them at bats so they can continue their development, you know, that's the perfect world, right? But again, too early to tell, but there's always a balance, and we'll have those discussions and we'll make those decisions when we need to.
That is about Luis Angel Acuna, because I think they're past that with Brett Beatty. I think that Brett Beatty has graduated from being a prospect. I mean, I think when you go back to the previous question of, hey, Brett's accomplished everything at AAA now. Now it's about doing it at the major league level. I know that was the question that it was asked, and Mendy basically agreed with it. I don't think they're afraid of Brett Beatty being a utility player and not getting consistent at-bats. I think they are with Luis Angel Acuna. And what we have to remind ourselves about Acuna, because we have a bias towards him. He played 14 games last year, and they were very important games. And he did an outstanding job filling in for Francisco Lindor. That should not be discounted at all. The guy comes up, he hits over 300, he hits three home runs, he got big hits, he played, for the most part, pretty good defense at shortstop. I commend him. But we cannot forget that when he was at AAA, playing every day, he did not have a great year. He had a sub 700 OPS. So do we believe that and say, hey, look, he's got a lot more development he needs to work on? Or do we look at the 14 game sample size and say he's ready? He's got to be up here. And that's the thing the Mets are going to have to answer, because Mendy explained the pluses and minuses on a young player getting a chance to play every day. And hey, is he going to get enough opportunities as a bench player? You think about his role as a bench player, and I described it before. Okay, he pinch runs. Is he really playing second base a lot over McNeil to start? Probably not. Is he getting a start in center field while they already have Tyrone Taylor and Jose Siri? Probably not. So if he makes the team, at least at the beginning, He's not getting a lot of playing time, which is why I think I'm guessing. I'm going to do a 26-man roster projection coming up on a future Rico. I'm leaning towards him not being on it, just based on the Mets hesitating to have him up here and not be able to play very often.
Carlos, you have a lot of good names for that lineup. Now, I'm going to assume Lindor is the leadoff hitter. Do you have it in your mind who's 2, 3, and 4 from there? I know Boone came out last year and said Soto, Judge, 2 and 3, and stuck with it.
Yeah, I got to sit down and talk to Juan and talk to Pete and talk to, you know, when Pete passes his physicals. with Nemo. The good thing, John, is we got some really good options here, you know, and whether you go Soto, second, third, Lindor, Pete, Vientos, you know, you feel good about your chances, right? So, again, too early. I've been playing around. I'm not going to lie. I've been playing around what it's going to look like. If we go this way, what about if we go that way? But who we're facing, I mean, when talking about a guy like Soto, I don't know, you know, but again, I got to have those conversations with them, let it kind of play out and see what's best for the players, what's best for the team, and then we'll go from there.
We can assume Lindor's in the leadoff spot.
Yeah, that work yes.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. We got one lineup confirmation from Mendy. He's sticking with Francisco Lindor as the leadoff hitter. It is amazing. And I don't think Mendy's going to do this, but Aaron Boone, to his credit, or his discredit, I guess, absolutely stuck with 2-3. Like, Soto Judge 2-3 was an absolute constant. And I remember, especially during the World Series, there were times of, hey, should they try something different? I even suggested leading off Aaron Judge for a while and giving him the protection of Juan Soto in the two-hole. Boone never did any of that. He literally stuck with that 2-3. I don't know if he's going to do that. Like, is Mendy going to stick? Is in his brain Juan Soto already the two-hitter? And are we going to have Lindor Soto 1-2 this entire season? I don't know. I'm trying to read off of last year, but last year is such a weird indicator because they got off to the bad start. There was almost a need to change the lineup. Maybe the Mets don't get off to a bad start and don't have the need to change the lineup. We're not getting this answer, this lineup answer, literally until opening day. Do not, I'm going to warn you right now, because I'm warning myself too. It's not like I'm just warning you. I have to explain this to myself over and over again. When that first spring training lineup comes out, and I'm going to be so pumped up. My scorebook's out. I even got my scorebook ready. I'll show it to you right now. What does that say on it? Can you read that? It says spring training, and yes, unfortunately, World Baseball Classic, because I have a spring training book. And the World Baseball Classic shares the spring training book. But when I put in that very first lineup in about a week and a half, it's a Saturday after, it's a week from Saturday. They're playing a baseball game a week from Saturday. When they put that lineup in, we cannot read too much into the names and the order, because that's not necessarily an indicator of what he's going to do on opening day. So I warn that to myself. I warn that to you.
To round back to second base, do you see the starting second base job as up for grabs during camp?
Every position is up for grabs. Now, look, Jeff McNeil. Jeff McNeil is coming into camp here with an opportunity to be the second baseman, you know? So, like I said, there's competitions. But Jeff is pretty much right there. So he's a big part of this team.
It sounds like you just want to see him earn it a little bit.
I mean, I want to see everybody earn it. You know? That's the big leagues, you know. Like, there's got to be some sense of urgency. And you know, like, you always feel like somebody's trying to take your job, you know. And that's the mentality. So, like I said, competition brings the best out of people. And I'm excited about Jeff. I'm excited about all the guys here. And
yeah, he's the second baseman. That was a good direct. All right, let's just cut to the chase, because we had that question a little bit earlier and he danced around it. Good cut to the chase question. Is he the second baseman? Does he have to earn it? Does he have to earn it? Everybody's got to earn it. Okay, Juan Soto's got to earn right field. Francisco Lindor's got to earn shortstop. I think that answer tells us probably what I even want, what I described earlier, which is he's the second baseman, but I wouldn't say he owns it. You're hitting 225 in May. We'll have a discussion. But clearly, based on that answer, the opening day second baseman is Jeff McNeil. I go back to the offseason when we were visioning things. One of the reasons I wanted Jose Iglesias back, obviously the circumstances are very different today in talking about this, and clearly he's not going to come back based on what David Stern said. We'll get to the David Stern's press conference. But I wanted him back under the idea that McNeil was going to be traded. Now, the reason that didn't happen is there was just no market for Jeff McNeil. They weren't going to give him away, nor should they have. I thought, hey, if they could get a back of the rotation arm, if they could get a solid bullpen arm, let's have that discussion. It clearly wasn't out there. And with McNeil coming back, hopefully he hits, enhances his value. But that, I think, is a big reason, in my opinion, why Jose Iglesias doesn't make as much sense on this roster.
Are Jet Williams and Luis Angel Acuña going to play the outfield?
Jet Williams is going to get some reps in center field. Acuña, we want to give him a look at third base as well. So don't be surprised if you see an infield alignment of Acuña at third, Beatty at second, Madrigal at fourth in a game. So because we want to see those guys, what they can do in certain days. So as I'm sitting here, I'm probably going to keep Acuña in the dirt. That doesn't mean we're taking, you know, outfield out of the equation. Maybe, you know, 3 weeks from now, that changes. But Jet Williams definitely is going to get some reps in center field.
I think Jet Williams' future is the center field job. You know, and Drew Gilbert obviously could be a part.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Part of that too, but Jet Williams in center field, hopefully he goes up to AAA and just tears the crap over the ball, and all of a sudden he becomes a factor. But it sounds like on that answer, Luis Angel Acuña may not have that opportunity to take the center field job, you know, at some point this season. That it's more going to be super utility, second base, and third base that we see from him.
What is Ronnie Mauricio's status?
Yeah, he's going through his running progression still. You won't see him in games hopefully somewhere middle of March, to be honest with you. This is a guy that missed the whole year last year, as you all know, and he has some setbacks. And right now he's trending in the right direction, and we want to keep it that way. So he's taking ground balls. He's, you know, taking BP outside. But as far as game goes, he's going to be, you know, we won't expect Mauricio to be in games early in camp.
That is the least surprising answer that one could have expected about Ronnie Mauricio. We've talked a little bit about Ronnie over the last couple of weeks and months, especially around the questions around Alonso. Hey, if Pete Alonso doesn't come back, how are they going to fill that role? And people would bring up Mauricio and say, oh, well, maybe Ronnie Mauricio. It was never going to be Ronnie Mauricio. And I think that answer gives you a hint here. He's not going to play to the middle of March. He hasn't played in over a year. This is the way I'm phrasing it, a rehab year for Ronnie Mauricio. He is clearly starting the year in the minor leagues. We'll see position-wise where they put him, because third base, second base, where do you play him? You know where I think Ronnie Mauricio could burst through? Maybe not this year, because I do think this is a rehab year, unless he just tears it up. But next year, I give you a long-term prediction on Ronnie Mauricio. Designated hitter. I think that's where we can see him. Because you got a lot of players, a lot of good young players that are on the come right now. You also have some positions that feel like they're kind of locked up for the next couple of years. Mark Vientos, if he can replicate or even come close to what he did last year. Where does Ronnie Mauricio fit in? Well, the DH spot this year is Starling Marte and Jesse Winker. So I think in 2026, we're probably talking about Ronnie Mauricio as a DH option. Remember, he's a switch hitter too, which is awesome. But I think realistically, we got to temper any expectations on Mauricio in 2025. It'll be great that he gets at-bats. It'll be great to see him out there, but he needs to play. Poor kid hasn't played in a year and a half. I think he needs a good year at AAA. And then in 2026, we'll see what his role could potentially be.
And what is Ronnie Mauricio's stat?
Carlos, just to follow up on John's question, last year your lineup kind of took a while to get to its best spot. You know, you moved people around a lot. You had a new personnel when Vientos came in. He worked himself to be the number two guy. With the names you're talking about now, it seems like it's a lineup that's going to be a lot more. Do you expect it to be more locked in? I mean, just because of the names and the track records of those guys?
Yes, and I think I said it last year. I like consistency, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you got established big league, elite big league hitters, I think that goes a long way too. That's the goal, you know. They know who's hitting in front of them. They know who's hitting behind them. But you got to stay open-minded too, you know. Guys will go through stretches where it's hard for them, and, you know, depending on who's available, who's not, you know, there's off days and there's always ways to move people around. But in the perfect world, I would like to have the first, I don't know, 5-6 guys, and that way they know who's hitting in front and who's hitting behind. So consistency is important for me, but that's not everything.
That's interesting because we talked about it on the lineup edition of the Rico that the Mets had 143 different lineups last year. I think a lot of that, you know, you think back to the playoffs now and the last month of the season, a lot of the changes in the lineup had to do with early in the season. It had to do with just the mess that was early in the season. You know, who was the third baseman for months at a time? There was so many things that were moving around. And then obviously he made the big lineup change of moving Lindor to the leadoff spot. He also had Alonso in the two spot for a while, Nimmo in the two spot. So I know the numbers tell us, well, Mendy's just going to move the lineup all over the place. But I think if you look closer at the postseason and even the last bunch of weeks of the year, I kind of believe what Carlos just said in that clip, that he's going to want a consistent lineup. Which means if this team is healthy, that's obviously pretty important here. When he unveils that 1-5 that we're all excited to see, we may see it over and over again. I don't know if it'll match what I said earlier with Boone, where he had Soto and Judge 2-3 basically the entire year. But I think if you look towards the end of the season, you did see Carlos trying to run out a very consistent lineup.
Yesterday, Alvarez called it the best lineup in baseball. Would you go as far as to agree with your catcher's assessment there? Or?
We like our lineup, but there's a lot of good teams out there too. You know, there's and look, you know, on paper, there's a lot of teams that look good, but you're not going to win a championship because, you know, your team looks good on paper. You still got to go out there and do it day in and day out. So we like our lineup. We like our team, but we also understand that there's a lot of good teams out there and there's a lot of good lineups out there too.
I love Francisco Alvarez. I would love to sign him to an extension right now so we could avoid free agency, buy out a couple of arb years, buy out a couple of free agent years. I like Francisco, and I think he's going to be a lot better than what he gave this team last year. My issue with that comment is, do I need to hear him be the guy to call the Mets the best lineup in baseball? A guy who had 237 last year, a guy who had 11 home runs, a guy who is not Juan Soto, a guy who is not Francisco Lindor, a guy who is not Pete Alonso, a guy who is not Brandon Nimmo. That was my only issue with it. And it also gives me flashbacks to, you know, Beltran saying, we're the team to beat in 2008, 2009, and we all know where that went. And I know that shouldn't be a factor here, but I think my issue with that comment was, are you the guy to be giving that out, the guy who's going to be hitting eighth in the batting order, a guy who has a lot to prove. And again, I like Francisco. I think he's got a chance to be really good. But my only issue with him calling it the best lineup in baseball is, number one, everyone else was asked about it, including Mendoza. Like, everybody knew it. Hey, you think it's the best lineup in baseball? Vientos was asked the question. So you put yourself out there, and then you force all your teammates and everyone else to have to answer questions about it too. And I don't know. It's coming from as of right now, and this can change, but it's coming from a guy who's the seventh best hitter in the lineup. So that's my only issue.
We've officially hit day two.
Ladies and gentlemen, day two of Carlos Mendoza.
How does his ramp up as he's looking to make the transition differ, if at all, from guys that have been starters for years?
Yeah, and this was something that we started it as soon as we signed him. And the fact that on day one of pitchers and catchers, he's already at three ups. That's pretty impressive. You know, you got to give him credit because that shows all the work that he did, you know, as soon as we signed him, like I said, with the mindset that he was making that transition. So he knew he needed to get here in, you know, ready to go to face hitters and, you know, a couple of ups and things like that as a reliever. You know, some of these guys are barely starting their bullpen progression, you know. So you got to give him credit, our pitching guys, you know, because they communicated and, you know, they put together a really good plan. We got to keep it that way, you know. It was encouraging. The fact, like I said, three ups today, and it looks good. So, again, the goal is to keep it that way and continue that build up and that progression.
Good start for, excuse me. Good start for Clay. I even saw a highlight of him striking out Jesse Winker, which always gives me pause early in spring training. Cause a part of me says, oh great, Clay Holmes looks good. Then the other part of me says, Jesse Winker looks bad. That's the issue with the inter squad performances, but certainly a nice positive beginning to the transition, the odyssey of Clay Holmes becoming a starter.
Innings number in mind for him at all?
No, not really. You know, we trust the process. We trust our guys, all the measures, you know, that we do in the training room. These guys, you know, after every outing, after every time they touch the mound, you know, they go through a lot of testing there. And, you know, that's how we make our decisions, plus the feedback from the players as well. So as far as innings goes, you know, we'll see. He's ready to go.
I think we live in a new world. This is one of the positive developments. There are no longer innings limits. That used to be a thing, but you know, we saw this last year with the Yankees' handling of Luis Gil and what the Mets are saying about Clay Holmes. They look at other things. They're going to look at his spin rate. They're going to look at his velocity. They're going to look at his arm angle. They're going to look at all sorts of things that maybe we don't even see to determine, hey, is there a warning sign here because he's thrown that many innings? So it's not going to be an arbitrary number. I also think what's going to make it easier is this six-man rotation, assuming that's what the Mets stick with. You know, if you have a six-man rotation through a full season, that means you're only making 27 starts a year. Now you miss a couple of starts. That number goes down to 24, 25. If you're only throwing five innings in each start, and that's right around the MLB average these days, that's 135 innings. It's not nearly as many as, you know, I guess we think of sometimes with a full-time starting pitcher.
Moving from Yankees to what stood out about, what do you remember about him?
His makeup, accountable, competes, cares, wants to win, obviously. And then his ability to move on from the next pitch, next at bat, next game, you know. There were some rough outings at times. There were some good ones, and he was always the same guy. So that says a lot, especially in this game. Here, you know, where it could go south quickly. And this is a guy that, like I say, he's been through a lot and he's handled it pretty well. So I'm excited to have him.
He has handled it well. He's had some adversity. One good thing about being a starter as compared to a reliever, watching Clay with the Yankees, he would give up a weak ground ball that sneaks through and then he'd walk a guy. And every Yankee fan would say, sometimes rightfully so, here we go. Even though Clay is not, you know, he's not giving up laser beams all over the place, a little bit of bad luck. Well, when you're looking for three outs and you only have a one-run lead, you have no margin for error. A couple of things go against you, it could blow your entire performance away. When you're a starting pitcher, you could have that bad first inning and give yourself that chance to settle down. That's going to be one of the big differences he's going to deal with.
Yeah.
add any pitches or anything like that to further his repertoire?
Yes, he's working on a couple pitches. You know, we know how the sweeper slider plus the power sinker, right? The changeup was encouraging today against lefties. The four seam is something that he's playing around with. Cutter, you know, it could be like a shorter slider if you want to call it, but he's, you know, working on that repertoire because as a starter, you're going to need more than two pitches to get through a lineup, you know, not only two times through, but, you know, a third time through a lineup. He's going to need that. So I like what I saw out of the changeup today, and, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Just for perspective on that, last year, according to Baseball Savant, he really threw three pitches, but two of them are very similar. He threw a sweeper, he threw a slider, and he threw a sinker. He did not throw a four-seam fastball. He only threw it twice all year long, and he did not throw a changeup. I think that sweeper and that slider are very similar. So when Mendy says two pitches, maybe those are essentially the same. But this is going to be big. You know, if you're going to make that transition from reliever to starter, what is that four-seamer? You threw it twice last year. What is that? Is that going to be an effective weapon? Same thing with a changeup. Those are the things to keep an eye on.
We saw Minter throwing today. Just what is the progression like for him, obviously, with the goal of him being available?
Yeah, he's in the middle of his bullpen progression. You know, low intensity. You know, like I said yesterday, the hope is, or the goal is at the end of the month, his intensity, you know, he's picking it up, and then, you know, hopefully move on to live BPs. And, you know, if we can get him, I don't know, somewhere between four or five games before we break camp, you know, I don't want to put a number, but that's the ideal for a reliever. But if we have to do that on a backfield, the good thing is he's feeling really good. It was encouraging to see him getting on the mound today and actually throw to a catcher, you know, at medium volume, if you want to call it. That was good.
Basically means as long as he can start getting into games, let's say the second week of March, that gives him enough time to be ready for the start of the season, since Mendy said it's only four or five appearances that he's really going to need to be ready for the start of the year. Talking about AJ Minter, of course.
4 to 5 games during camp to deem him ready, hopefully, for the start of the season.
Yeah, the goal is to have him ready for opening day. Again, we'll see how it goes. We don't want to put any pressure. He wants to be ready for opening day, but if he needs extra time, we'll give him extra time. So, but so far, so good.
That kind of answer makes you think he's not going to be ready for opening day. I hope he is, but I don't know. You almost hear that and you say, we'll see.
Pitchers that you're kind of approaching the same way, kind of that slower start.
I mean, everyone's different. But top of my mind, as far as the relievers go, probably like Nunez, because of, you know, the injuries from last year's, and maybe something that, you know, a couple of extra bullpens or a couple of extra live BPs before he gets in a game. We'll give him extra 2 days of rest. We'll play around with that. But other than that, I think everyone is in a good place right now.
I want everybody to bottle that. Bottle that everybody's healthy. You know, we're 2 days into spring training, 3 days into spring training, and so far, everybody's healthy. Bottle it. Because I don't know if it's going to be next week. I don't know if it's going to be in a couple of days, maybe in a few weeks. There are going to be RICOs in which we're talking about a multitude of injuries. So just bottle that right now when Mendy talks about, all right, right now, we're pretty damn healthy.
Pitchers that you're kind of approaching the same way, kind of that slower start?
I mean, everyone's different. But top of my mind, as far as the relievers go, probably like Nunez, because of, you know, the injuries from last year's. And
we already heard that, man. Stop that, repeating, you know, yourself.
A couple of extra bullpens.
Mendy wanted to make it clear. Everybody's healthy, but watch out for that.
Shows up early here, kind of eager to get out there and do stuff.
Yeah, he goes to show you that he's not satisfied, you know. And even throughout the offseason, like, his work was phenomenal. You know, he was getting after. I saw him early in January with Lindor, and he looked like he was ready to play nine innings, you know. And look, worked really hard at third base with his defense. And physically, he looks really good. So the fact that he's already here, that goes to show you that he's on a mission. So
I have said numerous times, and I got a guy who emails this to me a lot. I apologize for not having his name in front of me. And he says, Evan, you keep saying Vientos was a rookie last year. He was not. And of course, he's right. Vientos was not a rookie last year. It just felt like he was because he barely played in 2022. You almost forget that he actually got game action in 22. And then 2023, he finally got an opportunity the last half of the season when the games didn't matter. And he was awful. He wasn't very good. You're right. He wasn't a rookie last year, but this does feel like that answer to your great rookie season. Okay. Like that, like the sophomore slump is the baseball name for it. How does Mark Vientos respond to everybody having a book on him? Like, can he back up what he did in the 111 games he played last year? It's going to be a key question. And the fact he's there already, he's working his tail off. We saw that last year, is a great, great sign. If Mark Vientos can just replicate his numbers from a year ago, and remember, he only played 111 games because for the first few months, they weren't giving him an opportunity, and he still got the 27 home runs, that would be incredible. Obviously, the dream is, can he get better? He's in a better lineup. He's probably going to be put in a premier spot in the lineup, but Mark Vientos backing up his performance from 2024, not his rookie year, but sort of felt like one, is going to be one of the key questions that will determine our fate this year.
Does any part of you wonder if last year was a mirage with him, or you sold that what we saw?
We're pretty confident that he's real. You know, when you watch a kid and the way he played against elite pitching in the playoff, especially, you know, some of the at-bats, the situation, the way he was taking or laying off some tough pitches, his ability to make adjustment, and then his ability to handle adversity, you know, like that goes to show you that, hey, man, like it's not always going to be easy, you know, and it was hard for him at the beginning. It was hard for him at some point. I remember being in Colorado and, you know, like getting used to playing every day and the grinding of a big league season. And he found a way. So he's a good player.
He absolutely showed the ultimate fight last year. Think about his scenario. He's going to get an opportunity to DH. Like, he's going to. It's a done deal, right? He's going to be the DH last year. And then they signed J.D. Martinez. And instead of even giving him, which I wanted, a couple of weeks while JD was getting ready for the start of the year, just a few weeks to DH, he goes to the minor leagues. Think about the punch in the balls that Mark Vientos took upon the JD Martinez signing. And JD's talked about it, where he told Vientos, look, go out and play hard, even if it's for another team, even if it's to show another team how good you are. He comes back up, he hits a game-winning home run, and they send him down again. And he continues to grind and grind and grind. And then finally, he gets recalled again and takes the third base job, and the rest is history. So I think last year, it's a great point Mendy made. He showed so much just taking that job and eventually becoming the player that he became.
Well, that is a relatively short sample size after what he did during the regular season. That was pretty much the clincher for you that showed this is a guy that
It's a small sample size, but you're facing elite pitching, and it's the biggest stage there is in the game. And I think for me, just how he handled adversity, you know, and his ability to make adjustments, because pitchers are going to make adjustments. So in the league, will adjust to him, and he's going to have to make some adjustments. And I think he's more than capable of making those adjustments.
Yeah, and Mendy mentioned the playoffs. 327, 998 OPS, 5 home runs, including that game-tying home run against the Phillies on the road in the 9th inning. I mean, he was amazing in the postseason. Like, I know that doesn't prove that the regular season was legit, but wow. 24 years old, first full year being an everyday player, and you do that in the postseason? That's some badass stuff.
He was good. He was good. He looked good. Normal bullpen. Used all of his pitches. He add on a little bit when he needed to, took off from his velo. So far, he looked good. So we got to keep it that way.
I don't even know who he was talking about. I got to be honest with you. I couldn't hear. Someone looks good and their velocity is good. So that's a positive sign. Keep going.
Same lines. How valuable is this time for you? Obviously, you know, you only threw the five innings in the regular season, didn't have much of time Kona. In spring last year. How valuable is this for you to kind of get to know kind of how he ticks?
Yeah. It means a lot, you know, because to build a relationship, not only off the field, but now as a player, a healthy player, you know, and some of the things that, you know, how I see the game as a manager, I want to get his take. I want to see it every 5 or 6 days or whatever that is in real competition, you know. So it is important. Like I said, I feel like we do have a really good relationship off the field. But now when it's time to go get him and take the ball away from him, I want to see how he reacts. I want to see, you know, and then just having that relationship with him, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, remember, we saw Mendy last year a couple of times trust his pitcher when he wanted to stay in a game. I remember that with Jose Quintana relatively early in the season.
Looks like Drew Smith just resigned. I know it's not official, but what did you select about your year with
him? Yeah, great guy, you know, and this is a guy that when healthy takes the ball. It was sad that, you know, he went down the way he went down. But it means a lot to the guys in the locker room. Again, this is a guy that takes the baseball, give you multiple innings, give you high leverage innings, and it doesn't matter. He's a gamer. So
I think he's still talking about Kodai Senga.
I believe that was Drew Smith.
Oh, Drew Smith. I was surprised. So the Mets re-signed Drew Smith on a 1+1 deal, a 1-year deal, and then there's an option for year two. The reason I was surprised they signed Drew Smith, I know Hoff hates Drew Smith when the Mets non-tendered him, was because he's coming off Tommy John surgery, and the way he ended up getting hurt was so crazy to me. It was during the Edwin Diaz game in Chicago when Diaz got suspended, got thrown out with the sticky stuff, and Drew Smith looked like he was hurt on the mound, and they kept him in the game. Then he comes out, and then he needs Tommy John surgery. It looked like malpractice. Now, that's the way it looked. Obviously, that wasn't the case. Drew Smith is happy to be back. And look, there's nothing wrong with a deal like that. They sort of did that with Albert Alzolay, kind of the same thing, where he's not going to pitch this season. But they get a chance to rehab him, and then there's another reliever that at least is available in 2026. So I just kind of forgot about Drew Smith. I think we all did. I'm not against bringing him back. I know he had plenty of rocky moments, and he's certainly not in the circle of trust, but it was weird what happened before he got hurt. It was just strange.
Yeah, how do you think these new additions are going to mesh with your current roster guys coming back from last year? And what is your role in all of that, kind of bringing them all together?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a good thing that we got 7 weeks of spring training to lay down that foundation, you know, that it allowed these guys to create those connections and build those relationships, you know, and those are some of the messagings, you know, from my end, collectively and individually, that we got to make sure that, you know, we welcome these guys, whether they're veterans, whether they're guys competing for spots, like, you know, whether they make the opening day roster or not, guys over here are going to impact our roster, our club, throughout the year. So I think it's important that we use this time to make sure guys feel welcome and feel comfortable and part of the family here.
It doesn't feel like a very different roster. I know there are new additions, you know, look at Clay Holmes and Frankie Montas, but you look at the position player group outside of Eddie, it's not that different. There wasn't that many changes to this room. Now, there are some veteran voices that are pretty important that are no longer there. And it's not just Jose Iglesias, but you have to include J.D. Martinez as well. The hope is, at least the hope I have, is Francisco Lindor really blossomed into a leader last year. So I don't think, at least I hope, that not having a veteran like J.D., not having Jose Iglesias, is going to negatively affect this locker room too much. That this is a good place, it's a solid room, and that Lindor has learned how to lead that room. Because even with those other guys there, clearly Francisco Lindor was the leader of the team. And you go back to that team meeting, obviously, before they turn the season around. So I'm hopeful that this room doesn't crumble just because no one's singing OMG and JD Martinez isn't there to give hitting advice to everybody.
And that's it. That's a wrap for Carlos Mendoza for day one and two. Now, I do have some not breaking news, but obviously, you know, Alex Bregman went to the Tigers.
Yes, he signed with the Boston Red Sox. If you're just tuning in, to a 3-year, $120 million deal.
But the Freudian slip there was the deal that he got offered for 6 years, 170, was the Detroit Tigers. He turned that down.
Really? It was not the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yes. Surprise. Well, they probably offered him something too. They probably offered him like a 10-year contract for $300 million. And he said no.
By the way, 6 years, 170 is $28 million a year. Nothing to sneeze at. He's literally getting $40 million a year. So what Boston did, it's kind of what we've always talked about with Cohen potentially doing, or what the Yankees could have done, which is we're going to blow you away with a high AAV, but we're not going to give you this mega long-term contract. So him turning down the Detroit deal, it's him betting on himself, sure, but it's also him saying, I could bag a ton of money. Even if I opt out after year one, I got my $40 million. All I've got to do to match that contract is get, I guess, 5 years, 130, and then you've made it even to that Detroit offer. That's a massive, massive contract for Alex Bregman in a short-term basis, obviously, but $40 million a year? For Alex Bregman? Wow.
And he's how old is he? He's 30 or 31?
I think he's 31, but it doesn't even matter because if you're Boston, it's a 3-year deal, you know, or a 1-year deal. That one isn't a lock he opts out because $40 million a year is so much money. Pete's a lock to opt out because Pete makes 30 and then it goes down to 26. That's $14 million less than what Alex Bregman is going to get. What is the number one thing you learned from Carlos Mendoza over the first 2 days of his press conferences?
The biggest thing is that he's got a lot of guys to go through. He's got a lot of he's got a lot of players on this team, and everyone's gonna have a shot. Like, he doesn't want people to go in there and expecting to get a role. He wants people to earn it, even though we know Lindor's playing shortstop. Yeah. Playing right field, those guys. But the other people like Jeff McNeil. Listen, I do like the fact that he seems like he believes in this team, in all his players, whether it's, you know, especially the former Yankees, like he knows them.
Yeah.
So I feel like when you have a manager who actually really does believe in these players, it makes you feel like everyone's worked together to build a team. And it's like where I have my doubts earlier on in the offseason, he makes me feel better about it.
I agree. To me, the most interesting thing was, I think, just locking in Jose Budo as a reliever. That the idea that he's being stretched out, that he's in this competition, that is now officially dead. He is a reliever, and hopefully we see the good Budo. And we see, I love big Budo, and I cannot lie, being that, you know, circle of trust reliever that he was for a big part of last year. Well, we hope you enjoyed this edition of the Rico Bronya, episode 422, listening to Carlos Mendoza. David Stearns also met the media on day two of spring training, officially announcing the Pete Alonso signing. If you'd like to hear us analyze the David Stearns press conference, that Rico Bronya will be posted on Thursday night. So you can download that wherever you download your podcasts, on Thursday night or Friday morning. So that'll be in a day on the Rico Bronya. But we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you hanging out with us, subscribing wherever you download your podcast, rate, subscribe, all that great stuff. Thank you very much for listening to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.